All right, welcome to Season 3, Episode 30, also known as Episode 102 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Hugh, and joining me is the voice of Stanley the Bugman, Rob.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. They forgot to announce that one, but I guess it's just a smaller part of the Mario movie, right?
Correct, yeah. A very cameo appearance at best.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to create a Donkey Kong 3 remake, like the Final Fantasy remake.
Yeah, why not?
Stanley needs more love, I guess.
Yeah, or maybe they'll do Stanley like, I assume you watched like all the Scooby-Doo live-action remakes that came out, like, well, I guess your kids might not have been born yet, so you probably didn't.
No, those were surprisingly funny.
Yeah, but one of them, it turns out, like, Scrappy-Doo was secretly the villain the whole time.
Like, the whole time, like, forever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so maybe they're going to go that angle with Stanley or something.
Yeah, that's funny, yeah. So what's been going on?
Not much. I want to kind of acknowledge one thing. I think in the past week on the internets, there have been a lot of stories about the GameCube 20th anniversary. And we're actually planning to do a GameCube 20th anniversary episode of some sort, although we've done next to no planning. But we were going to do it like on the week that it launched in the U.S. So in case anyone was really, really worried about whether or not we were going to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, all these podcasts have been talking about their memories of the GameCube, but none of them have mentioned that they really don't have any memories of the GameCube launching in Japan.
Right. I have no memories of that at all.
Yeah.
Being not in. And then, I don't know, I debated whether I want to mention this on the podcast, but someone on the internet bought the domain perfectpacman.com. Mm-hmm. Which was a domain owned by Billy Mitchell until like the early zeros, and then he forgot about it. And they use it to create this like very, very long, very detailed anti-Billy Mitchell blog.
Yeah, it's somehow like definitive proof that like some of his Pac-Man scores, there's no way they were correct.
I don't know. The problem is they go into like sort of conspiracy theorist level of detail on some of these things. Where, you know, you find some little anomaly that's probably just an anomaly and you make it into like a massive thing.
Yeah. Like, you know, I forget the specifics. Like, if he did get this score, it would have been on this site for whatever reason. It's not, but maybe, yeah. People are human and they do things. I don't know.
No, it's far more like bizarre, nuanced things. Like, he has this award, but on this, from this camera angle, the sticker on the award looks 1 degree tilted from this picture taken 2 days later. You're like, oh, give me a break, people. Like, big picture. Like, you don't need to go into this minutia. So,
yeah.
It's insane. Totally insane.
We're definitely not Billy Mitchell apologists. I'm not a fan of his at all. Probably the opposite, but we're just saying, take this site with a grain of salt, too.
Yeah. I would say I'm not a fan and I'm not a hater. I don't really care strongly either way. I think he's a very good self-promoter. I think that's true. There's at least some evidence that people prior to him achieved the perfect Pac-Man score. It's just, it was in an era where that stuff wasn't documented very well.
Yeah. And people say that his Billy Mitchell image is kind of like a wrestler's image. Like, it's just a caricature, but I don't know. I've never met the guy in person, so I have no idea. So.
Yeah. I've seen him in person, but never, like, talked to him. And if I did, I assume it would be in character anyways.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've tried to watch his Twitch stream, and it started making me not a fan, the opposite of a fan. So I just stopped. I was like, get this away from me.
So, that's about it for me. What have you been up to?
Oh, man. Well, tons of work and tons of family stuff. And so not that much time for games, but I finished Miles Morales on the PS5. So it's the second Spider-Man game. Very good, but I feel like I just played that other Spider-Man game on PS4 Pro. So I was just kind of getting through it to get through it, but it was a really, really good game, really good storytelling. And gonna probably wait a little bit to start a new big game, but I've been messing with all my systems and trying to get my basement in order again, with all my consoles and stuff like that. And I'm finally getting there. It was a total disaster down here. Because you know how it gets where you're just in the middle of a few projects and something goes wrong in each of them and you need to go buy a part or solder something. And it just, they all start piling up. So that really started happening. But I got my mister going. And so one of the biggest mishaps in that was, you know, sometimes I just like to buy everything from Amazon just because you kind of know what you're going to get. You kind of know that it'll be shipped quickly and that if you need to return it, they usually side with the buyer, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you can't really buy Mr. Parts on Amazon.com, but I found a random, the Mr. is two or three different, two or three different boards you kind of plug into each other. And I found the, you know, the top Mr. IO board on Amazon, and I bought that one and nothing was working. Well, it was working until I tried the very specific thing I wanted to use the Mr. for, and it wouldn't work. And I have to give it up to the, there's going to be a Mr. episode, so I'll go into details in that. But the Discord, one of the Discords for Mr., I have to give it up to this community. They're helping everyone, including me, and just a very positive community. They're just like, where did you buy this board? And I explained it to them, and I went back and looked at the reviews, and the reviews were like, do not buy from this person. These are knockoff boards. They built themselves. Pretty much, it was like the AliExpress kind of deal. So not even all the chips were on there. And so, but anyway, yeah, that was my nightmare, but finally getting through it. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of Amazon, I was trying to see if a product existed. And Amazon's usually a good way to check for that. I was trying to find like GameCube memory cards that used an SD card. Because that seems like a very logical product that should completely exist. Not really, no. There are a couple, there are two different ones that you can buy, but they're intended for modded GameCubes, so you can run games off the memory card. It's not intended to use as an actual memory card.
Yeah.
And then when you read reviews of like third-party memory cards, because people still sell third-party memory cards, they're really hit or miss. A lot of like, yeah, it worked great for like 6 weeks and then it just corrupted.
Then, yeah, all my saves are gone.
Yeah, so I have, I should show it sometime. I have this device that I bought on clearance at like an EB Games, probably early, maybe mid zeros. And it only works with Windows ME. It says right there on the package. And it uses a parallel port, I believe. I have to look. It's either parallel or serial port. Either way, it's a port that is not a USB port. And it's basically like this little like UFO looking hub thing that you can put like GameCube, PlayStation, and a variety of other memory cards in, and it can transfer them to your computer via their proprietary Windows ME software. And I thought, like, if I like won the lottery or got some massive workers' comp claim, kind of trying to like reverse engineer that and write a driver for it for Linux would be a really awesome project.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good idea.
I think it can also do like Game Boy or maybe Game Boy Advance save memory. Because I think on the cartridges, I know like on Sega Genesis, if you have a battery, the battery is always at the same address on the card. So if you program a Sega Genesis game and you want to write to and from the save, right? It's a fixed memory address for where the battery is located on the card. Which also means you have to be careful not to write game code that lands in that space.
Yeah.
So I'm not explaining it very well, but hopefully people get it. So that's how it's able to like read save games from, it's either Game Boy or Game Boy Advance also.
That's crazy. Yeah, that would be a cool project, but I wonder if it would work in Wine plus a parallel to USB adapter or something.
Yeah, that's the other option is I have Windows ME. I could put that in VirtualBox.
Oh yeah.
And attempt to wire this thing together. This is just a pure time thing. Like literally I would have to be in traction or something.
Yeah.
Consider it.
That's funny. Cool.
Yeah. All right. We got a bunch of news and stuff because it seems like we haven't done news and stuff for a while.
Yeah.
The first one is, I guess it's by me. I wrote an article that I posted. If you remember, like a few months ago, I did some article where, I guess it was more than a year ago, where I was looking into the feasibility of translating a Japanese game, Legend of Heroes 2, that never got released in America. And I noticed that inside the CD-ROM image, there was like all this text from the English version of East 1 and 2, which was kind of confusing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I wonder how many other PC Engine CD games just have like random English text hidden in them. And I thought, okay, you know, like pulling down text out of a file is pretty easy, right? But determining if that text is English is like astronomically difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing around with a library. There's actually a library in Java that you basically feed it a string and it attempts to tell you it tells you what language that string is most likely.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. So you do get garbage out of it, but it basically is like this string you've sent is most likely English. Like basically if you send it like a big garbled like string with no vowels, it almost always says it's Welsh, which might be accurate. But it's actually fairly good at finding things that are definitely English.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, let's write a program that just scrapes every PC Engine CD game, looks for blocks of ASCII characters, and then feeds them through this other program to tell me what's English.
Mm-hmm.
And then load it all into a database so I can search it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a really good use of my time. And it was fun. Yeah, I found a lot of cool stuff. You know, you would find like just weird, you know, debug messages or you know, names of DLLs or other things that happened to be in the program. And then like the plot twist at the end was there's something like 6 different PC Engine games that all have the same weird text from East 2 hidden somewhere in them.
Wow.
Yeah. 1, 2, yeah. Like 6 different games. They all seem to be by the same developer. Like there was a company called Alpha System that I guess Hudson used for like just development outsourcing. And that's like the one company that worked on all 6 of these games in some capacity. So I'm guessing they just had some like they just were like importing a bunch of code and, you know, or had some maybe they had like a project template, something like that. And there's just a bunch of literal just blocks of text from completely unrelated games in there.
Wow. That's cool. So
that was really a very fun and useless activity I went on.
Nice.
I was going to try running it against Sega CD next, except for some reason it's much, much slower. I think because there are far more Sega CD games that have English text.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably need to update it to only scan Japanese games.
Mm, yeah. Cool. Yeah, that's a cool project.
Let's see. And speaking of text, there was one that, of course, I'm interested in. Someone did a retranslation of East 3 for Sega Genesis because it uses an extremely wonky translation. The Genesis one, I don't know where it was sourced from, but like there's just a lot of stuff that's wrong. Like not canon, meaning like they just change the names of places and people in ways that don't make any sense.
That is so strange.
Yeah, yeah. So they used... basically, they renamed it to be consistent with the modern versions of East 3 that were translated by Xseed.
Nice, good.
So that's a fun project. Determined Hacker has brought Google Maps to the NES.
Yeah, well, kind of. I mean, it's a cartridge with a Raspberry Pi in there, but it does bring Google Maps right into a 16x16 grid on your NES. So
yeah,
it looks really cool. I mean, this was not easy. You could zoom in and out and stuff. And yeah, very cool.
No, definitely not easy. Also completely useless, but probably a very fun educational activity.
Yeah, it's kind of like when they brought Netflix to the NES a few years ago.
Right.
No reason, but We also have a fan demake of Castlevania Symphony of the Night for Sega Genesis, and this is very impressive, if you ask me.
Yeah, I feel like we need a new section for the show called, like, Future Takedown Letter.
Yeah, definitely. And
I don't see this project completing.
I thought you'd really like this one simply because you've really dove into Genesis color palettes and stuff like that. And they do a lot of comparisons with the PlayStation, get them really close.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting, I think it's a great effort. I just don't see it finishing without some sort of legal threat.
Yeah. I think Konami is pretty litigious for this stuff.
Yeah. I think so too. Just build a Castlevania adjacent game on your own.
Yeah. And on our unplanned Vita section, we have a Retroflow. So this is pretty interesting. It's a new front end for your Vita. So I know a lot of people are not fans of what's even the Retro Vita, the regular Vita interface called.
I don't know.
It's not very good, though.
No, it's not. It's not good if you have, like, more than six games installed.
Yeah, you keep scrolling through different screens wondering where anything is. Well,
yeah, I mean, I just scroll to, like, the last screen and create a folder called Junk I Will Never Use. And then you can copy the shortcut to, like, all the other Vita apps into that folder.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, like the chat app and the web browser.
Yeah, the web browser and this is a lot of junk. Mm-hmm. Like it's like an HP laptop, you know, from
yeah.
Right? Like, oh, look, I have both McAfee and Symantec for some reason.
Yeah. Why is my computer running so slow? Yeah.
Yeah. The Vita is just loaded with, I like the Vita a lot, but yeah, it just comes loaded with stuff you will never use.
Mm-hmm.
Of course the PSP has the RSS reader built in, which still to me, like the craziest thing to include on your portable system.
I love it. They just envisioned people using, like, was it Vita or PSP or both that had Skype built in?
The Vita, like, had Skype built in.
Like, this is what I'm going to be using to contact my family.
Yeah,
or
but
work.
I don't think it had the RSS reader, though.
No, probably not.
All right, so what's this Vita thing? This is a new menu for Vita.
Yeah. So it's like a cover flow menu. So it was originally intended for people who hacked their Vita so they could play like Game Boy Advance games or whatever on it. But you could also just play, you know, use it to open up your regular Vita games. So very cool there. So it's called Retro Flow if anyone is interested in it. And then next, someone ported Final Fantasy IV and is teasing Final Fantasy V for the Vita. And I think this started from the Android ports. And so they're porting the Android ports to Vita. And it looks great. It's probably better than playing on a tablet or phone, because you have real controls. But yeah, pretty right, cool.
You can just buy Final Fantasy IV for the Vita. That's also an option.
Then why? What's the difference in this one? Let's see.
So this version would be using the Android graphics, which are the more cartoony ones.
Okay.
And I think maybe just practically buying Final Fantasy IV for the Vitas. Well, no, I don't. Why would you just buy Final Fantasy IV for the Vita?
Let's see. He also has three. Yeah, three is also done as well.
Because it's on. Maybe I'm getting confused because there's Final Fantasy IV for PSP. And I thought all PSP games you could theoretically buy and play on the Vita as well. Not physically. You have to download them.
Yeah. But I think that's right. But yeah, maybe this is just an updated version.
Well, it's cool. Not because this doesn't have the college years or whatever. I think Final Fantasy IV, the PSP version, has whatever the sequel is as well on there. I guess I could go grab my copy. But I think it has the sequel on there as well.
And it looks like it's really expensive. I'm looking at it now.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But I guess my question is, could you just download it from the Vita store? Yeah, now they're also working on Final Fantasy V, which I believe is not on Vita in any capacity. So that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I've only ever played 5 on like a phone.
And then
never had a US release until then.
Yeah, and 5 was originally Final Fantasy 27 in Japan, right? Is that how it works?
Something, who knows? No, it was 5-5. This is actually like real 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It would have been Final Fantasy 3, I guess, if it came out in America. I don't know.
Yeah. And then in the final Vita news, Super Mario Brothers X. So...
Ooh, this is also for our future Takedown letter section.
Oh, yeah. So people are calling this like the greatest fan-made tribute to Super Mario of all time, at least in this article they are. But it's really, you know, the first 4 Mario games all in one, but its own thing. You could play as different characters. Like, you know, you could also play as Peach, Toad, and Link, apparently. 60 levels. Co-op playing, and yeah, this is all on your Vita, and it looks beautiful. Looks a lot like Super Mario World.
Yep.
So that's the Vita news. What else do we have?
Let's see a couple other things here. Interview with the Donkey Kong Country composer talking about aquatic ambience, which is maybe the most famous Super Nintendo song. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't realize how much people love that song.
It's, yeah, it's really hypnotic and kind of addictive.
A lost Game Boy Color RPG game is coming out called Infinity.
Yeah. Did we talk about this? This was a Kickstarter, right?
This sounds really familiar, but yeah, it's a RPG game that never came out, and now it's going to.
Let's see, from the bad headline department, we have YouTube Duo finds $100,000 of vintage games in hoarder's abandoned house. And I say it's deceptive because they're using the same kind of like Storage Wars model of pricing things. Like, oh, I found some stuff. What's the highest offer for this on eBay? Yep, that's what it's worth. Right? Like, what's the highest ask on
eBay? Now they do find a lot of cool, you know, still shrink wrap stuff.
How much does shrink wrap like protect against, you know, rat droppings though?
Exactly. Yeah. Some of the stuff was in boxes, and it's also a bit deceptive. So, you know, this YouTube channel isn't bad. We're not really dogging on them, but yeah. You know, they find a lot of everything from really, I mean, it looks like Super Nintendo, PlayStation games, just a ton of stuff. Yeah. Very cool stuff, but... And they start out by saying that, yeah, it was this, and, you know, we got a tip that it was in this abandoned house. And this house was about to be knocked down. Like, okay. this thing, you know, was more termites holding hands than an actual house. And
There was definitely termite damage. I mean, there was wood, like, falling over all over. I don't know how they went in there. It didn't look safe.
Exactly. Yeah. And one of them got bit by, I'm trying to look through this article, by some crazy spider.
Yeah. Well, and, that'll happen to your own house. That's not
true. Yeah. And then if you go to like the end, it's a 3-part series. It was one of their uncle's houses.
Oh, so and it's not really that much of an anonymous tip.
Exactly. Yeah. And also like, wow, this, like, how did this guy live there? You know, he was definitely a hoarder. So, but still makes it really jealous seeing all the stuff they found. I hope they use it for the powers of good and they just don't sell it for profit or keep it on a shelf.
Yeah, I don't know, man. If you're willing to go through that house, you deserve whatever you get.
Well, she probably had to anyway. It was probably her job because it was her uncle who wasn't there anymore. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know how that, you know... I don't know. I don't want to get into like estate planning stuff. I don't know about that.
Yeah. I mean, they could have just plowed it down, I guess, and then shoveled it away.
They could have. If the house was actually like, well, like one, you aren't like okay, I don't want to get into like a state law. Like if you have kids and stuff, you've probably thought about like estate planning. And if like the uncle didn't have a will or anything, this is maybe technically robbery.
Oh yeah, true.
Yeah. It's really, really hard to say, but I'll leave that one for the lawyers. All right. So then real quickly, we want to address some things from this week's Nintendo Direct. I don't have like a womp womp sound effect, but we are getting Nintendo 64 and Sega Genesis games, but they're going to cost some undisclosed amount extra. And the selection is not that good. And also, I think you can buy the Sega Genesis collection for Switch for $20. That includes all the games.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you don't have to pay monthly. So
I'm going to look this up right now.
The sad part too is they didn't say what the next tier is going to be to get this stuff.
Right. Will it be $1? Will it be $50?
And exactly. Yeah. If it's, so I did the math before. So this was a few days ago. If you can't pay for Switch Online monthly, I don't think, but if you pay annually just for yourself, it ends up being like $1.12 a month or something. So even if they double it, you're paying $2.25 a month. I mean, that's still not horrible, but it's almost, I just couldn't make myself do it just because it just feels like a money grab. That's all I'm saying.
It kind of does. Well, the selection isn't very good. I mean, I'm looking at like, hold on, I have to accept cookies to view the list of games from Sega here. Yeah, I mean, like all the games that you would get, at least on the Sega side, are on this collection that is $20 to $30.
Mm-hmm.
And you own them permanently. And you probably already have 6 different copies of this.
Yeah. Well,
and then the Nintendo 64 games, I'm just like, yeah, Ocarina of Time, it's one of the greatest games of all time. Sure. I have the 3DS remake that's slightly better.
Yeah, and also, I think everyone wanted a upgraded one for the Switch. People want to give Nintendo money for an Ocarina of Time update, you know, widescreen, all that stuff. Just like they did for the Mario trilogy that they released over the summer.
And then they're going to also release some $50 wireless controllers that are based on the Nintendo 64 and Sega Genesis shells. I think you could already buy a Sega Genesis controller for Switch from
8-Bit-Do or something.
8-Bit-Do, yeah. Or is that the one I'm thinking of? Who's the other one that I actually like their controllers? They make the licensed Sega Genesis controller. I don't think it's Retrobit, is it? Yeah, Retrobit. So they have actual, like, from Sega licensed controllers that are like identical to the original Sega Genesis controller.
Nice.
So I bought a few of those. They're always at Midwest Gaming Classics. You can try out the controllers there and buy them. 8-Bit-Do does repro controllers that are very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
But
so if so, to take you back in time when they first released Switch Online's retro collection for NES and SNES, you could, you know, buy those controllers, and I own them and I love them. But remember, you have to get them from Nintendo.com. You have to be a subscriber to the online service to buy them from Nintendo.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can't not subscribe to the service and buy these controllers. I mean, I guess that's a good way to, you know, keep scalpers away, but that means if you want these controllers and you don't want to pay more for the extended Switch Online, you're out of luck. You know, what if I just wanted the N64 controller to play the Mario 64 game I bought over the summer? I can't.
Yeah.
It's just frustrating. I think the best thing that came out of all of that was the Castlevania Advance Collection that came out.
Yeah, that looks interesting. Sorry, I was looking at, I got sidetracked here. Retrobit does sell a Nintendo 64 style controller you can use with the Switch, but it's wired. And then they have wireless Saturn controllers that you can use with the Switch. Those are very similar to the Genesis one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Retrobit has also like Saturn, PlayStation, and NES style controllers you can use with the Switch.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah.
And I wish I did not know about those because now I'm going to be spending money.
Yeah. See, I have the Switch Lite, so I don't really think a lot about controllers. But if I end up getting the OLED or whatever it is, if I end up getting that, then I guess I have to think about wireless controllers because I actually don't like the Switch Nunchuck controllers that much, like as a standalone controller.
No, I use the Pro controller, but I'm not the biggest fan of that. But I got an early model and I heard those were not as good as the newer ones.
All right. And last up, kind of timely, at least for us, is there's a remake of ActRaiser was announced as well.
Yeah, we had no idea that was coming out. And it looks gorgeous, but we'll dive into that when we get into Game Club.
Yeah. All right. So we got a quick topic here. So last week, Dale, who is a homebrew NES developer, I think we talked about his stuff, Dale Cooper, itch.io. We for sure have talked about his software before.
Yeah, yeah.
And he asked us a question about what is the best, really meaning like favorite, way to play NES games. He says he prefers playing NES on a CRT, but he also has the AVS plugged into his high-def television. He likes them both, but they're not exactly the same. So his NES is a PAL French one, so the signal is scart and sometimes is ugly. And then he has a Raspberry Pi based handheld that he also uses. And was curious what we thought about the FC Pocket portable, which I guess I'll talk about because I'm going to talk about Hyperkin clone systems. Mm-hmm. So we said, hey, what is your favorite way to play NES games? And I thought I made a whole giant table here of like every way I've played NES games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I could go through all of them.
Yeah. Let's just step through these.
So I have, how many different ways do I have to play NES games? There's more than this, of course. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it's really exciting. 6, 7, 8, 9.
I added a lot to the end of
12, it. 13. We have 13 different ways we've played NES games. I've probably used 11 of these.
Mm-hmm.
So the obvious one is original NES hardware, which, of course, you know, hooked up to like a CRT TV or I guess like a monitor, like a C64 monitor, if you have the toaster model NES. If you have the remade NES, the top loader, then you're limited to like CRT TV only. Again, not counting like, oh, I'm going to mod it to do HDMI out or some nonsense.
Yeah.
Like just as is, that just has regular coaxial out.
One thing I do recommend for anyone using an original NES console is on the lockout chip, I think it's pin 7, you could easily pull out. And definitely watch a YouTube video on how to do this first, but it makes it so your games are most likely to load the first time every time, and you won't need as much cleaning because it's usually the lockout pin of the cartridge that is dirty and won't let your game load. So, Little tip there. It really helps. NES Classic is next.
Yep. Yep. So I was going to say the downside to original NES hardware, of course, is that you have to have a giant TV somewhere.
Yeah. In my old basement, that made sense. Now my new basement is too small for a CRT, so it's just not an option for me.
Yes. So let's see. NES Classic, what I put pros and cons for each of these. Pros is that it actually works really well and looks great. I think the picture on it is pretty amazing, and the play, I don't notice any lag or any other issues with the play. The cons is that it's a very, very limited game selection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's kind of a downside. It does have some save games support.
And you can hack it, but it kind of gets rid of the novelty of it, yeah, if you ask me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know, like, I've seen how to hack it. It's really weird because it doesn't have like a USB port on there. So hacking it is like a lot more work than hacking like the PlayStation Classic.
Oh no, there's a USB port on the back. That's the power port. So you need to get
through the power.
Okay. You need to get a Y cable. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you had to like take it apart or something.
No, no, no.
Okay. And I wrote the Switch NES thing, whatever that service is called.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually looks really great. And I think has better save state support than the NES Classic, mostly because you don't have to like walk over and hit the reset button. And the downside to me is that it has better or worse game selection than the Classic, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, it's definitely the most convenient way. If you have a Switch, it is the most convenient way to play NES games.
Yeah. Then I put Hyperkin clone systems, which would include, I think Dale asked about the FC, which I believe the FC Pocket, which I believe is also Hyperkin clone system. And I've tried a couple of these, and they're okay. Like, they upscale all right. The latest iteration has a really good controller. Like, I use that controller with the original NES rather than the Nintendo controllers. It's pretty solid. The games really look off on these systems, though. Like, the colors are just wrong.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't figure out the PPU emulation at all.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it just, like, will refuse to boot a game for no reason that I can possibly discern. Put emulators on PC is another decent option, which is, you know, they usually work and are definitely convenient. But the downside is you're probably sitting at your computer, is what I, more or less.
Yeah, and you'll be messing with, just like the RetroPie and some other options we have here, you'll be messing with how to make it work better more than you're actually playing games.
Okay, one of my preferred ways, which is playing on the Ouya or a different Android micro console. So something connected to your TV. So it's like a small Android device connected to your TV. I like that option a lot. The downside to it is the emulation is not super accurate. You will occasionally get games that don't look or play right. And I assume there's input lag, but I've never really noticed it. Because I'm mostly playing like RPGs or adventure games.
Yeah. Hopefully if you're plugged in, it's not too bad.
Yeah. I'm usually using like a Bluetooth controller or like the Ouya, which I know is like a weird system almost nobody owns now. That actually works with PlayStation 3 controllers.
Oh.
Yeah. So you can just use PlayStation 3 controller as like the main controller for the system and it works perfectly.
Nice.
RetroPie. It's really trendy and you can run it on like some kind of, you can put it in like a dedicated cabinet or on a small mod, like you can attach these, the Raspberry Pi to like anything.
Oh, if you're just going to do NES games in here, I mean, you could get the cheapest, smallest Raspberry Pi. You're not spending really any money on this thing.
Yeah. I think the Pi Zero, which is like $5 or something, probably does NES emulation really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
The biggest downside to RetroPie, and maybe this was just me, is that I spent way more time configuring it than actually playing games on it.
And somehow controllers just, it seems to not save. If I have more than one controller connected to it, it just, I don't know, all hell breaks out all the time. I'm always trying to figure out controller settings.
Yeah. So I gave up on doing RetroPie. One of my least favorite options. Clone system sold at a sketchy mall kiosk or on Alibaba. I assume you've seen these.
Yes.
They're obviously very, very cheap, which I guess is good, but they're also generally garbage.
And your credit card is now stolen at that point.
Yes. The mall kiosk, you can at least pay cash, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. The batteries will probably explode as well.
That's a good point, too, yeah. Yeah. NES emulator on Dreamcast, which I have actually done. It was on my office Dreamcast, which is another kind of long story. And really for me, it was the novelty of just being able to run NES games on the Dreamcast. And that the controller works pretty well. The downside was the games generally played like garbage.
So I did this as well. It was probably back in 2005, 2006 at the latest. And maybe 2004, 2005. It had been so long since I had played an actual NES that I thought it was just perfect. I couldn't believe how perfect it was. You know, and thinking back is like far from perfect. But it's playable. Everything's playable. It looks pretty good, I guess.
yeah, I guess. I was not a fan of this option.
If anyone else wants to relive this and they don't have a Dreamcast, if you happen to have a Nintendo 64 and an EverDrive for the Nintendo 64, it has built-in, I'm using air quotes, NES compatibility, and it works about the same. It's not very good emulation on the Nintendo 64.
I did not know that existed, and now I might spend $100 to get that EverDrive card.
Nice.
I assume you added the next couple here. Analog Antiques. I've not played one of these.
Yeah. It just works. There's no need for an EverDrive because you could easily jailbreak it just by a firmware update, and then you could just put ROMs onto an SD card in it. You can use original cards or an EverDrive if you want. Tons of video tweaks, scan lines, really no latency to speak of because it's FPGA. Downside is it's really expensive and usually hard to get.
Yeah.
The Mister, it works perfect. Again, it's FPGA. Could get a bit pricey, and it's not the easiest thing in the world to get working. The Vita, PSP, and 3DS, they're great because they're portable. I think the emulation is great, especially on the Vita. PSP and 3DS, the emulation is a bit lacking, but it's a small screen, and, you know, it's kind of hard to tell. And you have to hack your handheld system. That's the downside. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, now, if you found a Vita or PSP, like, in a hoarder house or something, then I guess maybe it's okay to try hacking it.
Yeah. And hacking the PSP and the Vita are not fun. 3DS, pretty easy. You just buy a R4 card. And then last but not least, the Wii Virtual Console. It was great. I have not played a Wii U. I heard the Wii U does not have good SNES emulation.
Yeah, it depends what you're doing. So the thing that's confusing about the Wii U is the Wii U has, you know, its own online, it has its own version of Virtual Console, right? Mm-hmm. And like I played Earthbound or something. I played games on it, and it plays really well, actually. The problem is if you're playing games that you originally bought on the Wii on the Wii U, it's a really big, kind of a bad experience.
Really? How come?
Because you have to boot the Wii U into Wii mode. So this is what's weird about the Wii U is it doesn't just like, you can't just put a Wii game in. And if you had a Wii with Virtual Console, you can transfer all that content to the Wii U, but it's transferred to the Wii mode on the Wii U. This is really confusing to talk about. So yeah. when you boot the Wii U into Wii mode, it like the one, the picture is just not very good. Like, I don't know what it's doing to scale or not scale, but it just kind of looks funky. And yeah, everything just doesn't, I mean, the Wii mode plays fairly well. It's just not quite as good as playing it on the actual Wii. It's just a confusing experience all around.
Okay. Yeah. You know, a bit off topic, but the reason why I never bought or cared about a Wii U is I figured it was just an upgraded Wii and there was never really anything on it that I really needed.
Yeah.
And that just isn't the case. It's a totally different system, even though it kind of looks similar. That was a big marketing fault, I think, on Nintendo.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of mistakes made with the Wii U. The thing about the Wii U, though, is almost the entire library is on Switch, so it's not that it had bad games.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, it's really hard for me to think about Wii U-exclusive games. Like, there just aren't very many. They're generally things that use the pad heavily and aren't, I guess, easy to port to Switch. Mm. But virtually everything has been ported to the Switch.
Yeah. So what would you say is your favorite way to play NES games?
You know, the one I play the most right now is on the Switch. That's really the most common one, because I tend to go back to just a few fairly common games. Mm-hmm. I think if I owned an analog, that would probably be the route I would go, but I don't have one.
Yeah. So, I mean, my favorite is, you know, if the game is on the Switch, it's the Switch with the NES controller. Because it does a fun, you know, if you have the NES controller, it does a few fun things. Like, I think it changes the background a little bit in the menus and also gives you retro sounds. Mm-hmm. But then, yeah, the analog and the Mister are kind of a tie for me. Now that the Misters work, like, analog I did like better, but now that I have my Mister working great, they're pretty much the same to me.
Okay.
So, yeah, Dale, thank you for that email that turned into a topic.
Yeah. And again, if you want us to talk about your email or you suggest a topic or whatever, what is that address?
Email@retrogameclub.net.
All right. So we've got a few Game Club games. Let's jump into them. We got ActRaiser.
Yeah. So this is an Enix game from, what year is this from? So Japan, 1990. Well, December 1990. North America, November 1991. And this is a unique game. It starts out with, well, you are a, I guess, kind of god that is in a heaven type setting, and you pretty much need to defeat all the monsters and the devil or demonic type entity on this world. And so there's two different modes. The fight mode, where you go down and you fight monsters in a kind of action platformy type setting, reminds me of kind of Legendary Axe or Rastan. And and then after you defeat that boss, then people can move into that area, and it turns into a city building, like a top down almost. I want to say it doesn't play anything like this, but in terms of very basic looks, like SimCity, Populous, civilization type thing. And as you're directing where the people should extend the town, monsters are trying to ruin the town or defeat the people. So you have to get them to a place where they could fight the monsters' lairs. And they'll also call you down and give you offerings and also say, like, hey, if you do this one little mission on this part of the map, we'll, you know, give you this different offering, which is kind of like an upgrade. And I want to point out that this game has some of the best music I've heard on the SNES. Mm-hmm. This was the first game developed by Quintet, who went on to do a bunch of stuff, including but not limited to Shenmue. I think you said a lot of the East team was on this as well.
Yeah. It was the developers who worked on basically East 1 through 3, who then got frustrated with, I guess, Falcom as a company has sort of a bad reputation for maybe underpaying developers and definitely not crediting developers as well as developers, you know, think they should be credited. This is how Activision formed, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the Activision guys didn't like that Atari was keeping them anonymous. And so these guys left and started their own company. And, you know, they're famous for these games. They worked on, Soul Blazer, which I think I featured a few months ago. And that was, you can see that, like, a lot of their games are similar to East in some ways. Like, you could argue that, you could argue, like, the side-scrolling part is a little bit like East or like other early. There's a couple other early Falcom games that are kind of similar.
Mm-hmm.
So, they did. What was their role in Shenmue? I'm sorry, I was confused by that one.
It shows them as works developed. Shenmue, 1999. Publisher, Sega.
Hmm. They clearly were not the only developers on it, but...
But yeah, maybe they did one part or something. But yeah, ActRaiser, Soul Blazer, ActRaiser 2, Illusion of Gaia, Soul Crisis, Shenmue, Godzilla Generations. Support.
So yeah, it says development support, which tells me they probably like outsourced some portion of development to them.
Mm-hmm.
But did they go out of business or something? Yeah, they shut down at some point. Yeah. Last thing they worked on was 2004.
Yeah, too bad because they were doing a lot of cool stuff. But,
And then, of course, the music is Yuzo Koshiro, who was the composer for East 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And, of course, composer for tons and tons of other legendary soundtracks.
Yeah, and I didn't realize he developed his own music programming language for SNES and other systems. That's really cool.
Yeah, they also worked on, it's been a long time since I played this game, they worked on an RPG called Robotrek, which I think is like one of the most underrated RPGs on the Super Nintendo.
Oh, nice. Is that turn-based, action-based?
Yeah, it's a turn-based RPG. It's very similar to a Final Fantasy game.
Okay. Oh, yeah, this has good graphics. Wow.
Yeah, overall, like it's a company that does really good stuff.
Yeah. Well, so, there is a sequel to this game that takes out the city building. And just like we said in the news, they just released a remake of ActRaiser, which you could pick up on the Switch Online store. And it looks fantastic. Looks like they did a great job updating, so I'm excited to dive into that. But I think our takes on this were very predictable, because this game did get very high praise and good ratings back in the day, but it was a divisive game. Not everyone liked it. So quickly, my take was I really enjoy this game. I did not know really what to expect, even though I played it briefly a long time ago. I thought the side-scrolling action was much better. I thought it played better than it looked, even though it looked great. It just, I've been burned in the past by side-scrolling platforms of this era, and I thought it was fine, and maybe it just clicked with me. And in short, I like this game way more than I thought I would, and I'm going to spend some more time on it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest takeaway is if I had played this for the first time in 1992, this would have been like one of my favorite games ever. Going back to it today for the first time, because I really didn't play back in the day, I had a hard time getting into it, and I really didn't like it all that much. Like the whole town building thing is kind of weird. They did a similar thing that like their next game was Soul Blazer, which I mentioned, and Soul Blazer does kind of similar-ish thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was maybe better because it was very simple. Like, you find someone, it unlocks part of the town. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they go around, you talk to people. Sometimes there's, like, errands you have to do for them. It was pretty simple. Mm-hmm. And then the side-scrolling part, I think you already compared it to Rastan. And, yeah, it plays a lot like Rastan. It plays similar to some other, like I said, some other early Falcom games, too, so.
But I think the hitboxes and kind of how close you could get to an edge before you fall, you know, or maybe you jump too late and you fall. I think all that is very fair in this compared to like Rastan or Legendary X.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Rastan was trying to kill you, right? Like, and I didn't really get that impression from ActRaiser. I did watch some speed runs of it, which are, of course, confusing if you don't know the game very well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's jump to your game.
Yeah, so I did Super Dodgeball. I played the PC Engine version. There's also a CD version, but it has like a lot of story you have to sit through before you play the game. Mm-hmm. I guess it's fun for a little bit. I really wasn't familiar with the idea of dodgeball that had formal rules. That's really like new concept to me. So here in the US, what would happen is like the gym teacher would be really hungover and they would just declare dodgeball day. and then it was just kids with, you know, beating each other senseless with like giant rubber balls. Was that your experience in grade school?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I think Zach commented that was identical to him too, for him too. Yeah. So I didn't really realize there was like a dodgeball that had teams and rules and blah, blah, blah. Only in this game, it doesn't seem like hitting your opponent eliminates them. You actually have to beat them senseless. Like you have to hit them a certain number of times until they're like literally unconscious from being pummeled with a rubber ball.
And then they could get to go on your side behind you to assist their team.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was kind of fun. I could probably, if I, you know, had a few days where I didn't really have anything else going on, I could probably play through the story, you know, with save states and stuff. It would definitely make it easier. Mm-hmm. I there are times I don't know if I completely understood the controls of the game. But overall it was kind of fun. This is another thing, like if I had first played this in 92, I probably would have played through it and been a huge fan. Mm-hmm. And today maybe I'm, you know, a little more jaded. I'm like, oh yeah, it's all right. It's It's a cool idea. I can't think of too many other games like it. But yeah, I don't think I'll go back to it.
It's surprising how much their heads looked like Double Dragon type heads. I thought I was onto something with that. Like maybe one of the same artists or something worked on it, but no, totally different teams.
Yeah, it's the River City Ransom team, right?
Yeah, yeah. I played the Neo Geo port of this, which until after I played it, I didn't realize that Neo Geo and one other port, I forget what it was, maybe DOS, is actually a sequel, but it just has the exact same name. It's just Super Dodgeball. But really the only difference is some quality of life stuff, plus the graphics and sound are just gorgeous. And one thing I love that every Neo Geo game does is when you boot it up, it tells you what the controls are with a little demo. So that was very handy. And very beautiful game, very arcadey. That's about it. You know, it's not something I would play too much, but that doesn't make it a bad thing, you know. Any yes. Final thoughts on that?
No. I mean, I think this is a game a lot of people would enjoy. I just, I enjoyed it. I just wouldn't play it for more than a few minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of that category of games. It's like, okay, it's pretty neat. Like if I saw it set up at a game convention, I would definitely challenge a random person to a versus game. Probably lose, but it would still be fun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what are you going to play next?
I just saw that Road Rash is turning 30 this month. Although I guess it'll be October by the time we record again. But I'm going to pick Road Rash.
Nice. I'm going to do TV Sports Football on the TurboGrafx-16 for, you know, it's kind of football season in the States now. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't like this game. I'm just telling everyone, just give it a try. The second you figure out how to throw, the game becomes fun. It's not intuitive.
Is that on the TurboGrafx Classic Mini?
I can't remember if it is. I actually own this Hue card.
I probably do own it. It was a fairly common game just because there weren't many sports games for the TurboGrafx.
Yeah. Yeah. You had more kickboxing games than football games on the TurboGrafx.
Yeah, I think there were two football games total. All right. So we got a lot of email. So apologies to anyone if I paraphrase your email excessively. I try not to lose intent here. Where was I? Okay. First email is, I'll start with the majors email. I guess on a recent episode, I mentioned not having any hobbies, right? which is probably true. But then he reminded me that aren't I a big fan of pro wrestling? And I guess that is true. I did watch the other night an old Halloween Havoc that was completely terrible. Don't know why I put myself through that. And he wanted to refer to a backyard wrestling group called The One Wrestling Show. That's the word the number one wrestling show.
Nice.
And I looked them up. They do have like a page and stuff. I've not been to a backyard wrestling show. I don't think. I mean, I've been to like a community college gymnasium show, which is pretty close to a backyard show. I don't know if I would go to a backyard show.
You know,
I feel like at any moment the police could just raid the thing.
Yeah. I've never been to one either.
Yeah. I feel like I associate it with, more rural areas because you have to have a big backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the city or suburbs, you're probably not going to be able to pull that off easily.
Yeah, your neighbors probably have something to say about it.
Yeah, well, it's just like logistical space. Like I could put a pro wrestling ring in my yard. My neighbors already hate me, so it would be really bad. Best thrift store finds. He mentions finding a CDI at the thrift store because the store probably thought it was a CD player. And he mentions that he always looks for Nuance at flea markets in the DVD section, right? And I'll say that I do that too. I've been looking every time I go to a Goodwill or Salvation Army, I go right for the DVD section to see if one of them is a new one. Because they don't know the difference. And yeah, that was me. So the CDI was literally just in a stack of CD players for $5 at a thrift store. Majors is the old Rob from Detroit, and he takes that as a compliment. So that's good. And then the whole debate about you can tell how old someone is based on whether or not they call electronic music EDM or techno.
Yeah.
Which I agree with. So thank you for that email. Adam writes in about Joust and some other games we've recently talked about. Back on the 2600, referred to Joust as, I'll say, bird butt, because of how he played the game. He would stand on the lowest platform in the middle and wait for enemies to come, and then fly up a little bit higher and hit them with your bird butt.
That's the best strat for the game.
Yep. And he could get to the fifth screen just with that simple strategy. I think the middle platform must disappear after the fifth screen or something.
Oh, probably, yeah.
It's something like that. Yeah, like I remember there's a strategy in the NES one that worked for like three or four screens and then the platform was gone. He also recently played Pole Position on the... This is weird. Played Pole Position on the Namco Museum Collection for the GBA on the Wii U Virtual Console.
Yeah, that sentence was hard for me to read too, but it makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's a lot of emulation hops.
Mm-hmm.
So he said the graphics looked pretty similar to the arcade, and the controllers were good with the Wii U Pro controller, although he just barely qualified. He says Pole Position, he thinks, is very good at making you feel like you're going fast, but that the turning is very, very difficult to master, which is all true.
Yeah.
And they tried two other Wii U Virtual Console games. One of them was Donkey Kong Jr. Math, which is very boring to play by yourself. It's completely pointless to play by yourself, really. But he said it once you had a second player, it's actually kind of a fun game. Have you played Donkey Kong Jr. Math?
No, I have not.
So the idea is like there's like a number you're trying to get to. So like 45. That's the first number that came to my mind here. And on the vines, there's numbers and plus signs and multiplication and division and all that stuff, right? And the idea is you're just knocking stuff down until you get to 45. So, like, you might do 7 times 5 and then knock down a plus sign and a plus sign. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you are knocking down the things to try and get to the number. And if you go over it, then you have to find a minus sign. It's kind of a fun concept.
Yeah.
I tried playing against my kid once. My kids are so awful at math that, I mean, it wasn't really even close. I don't know how they teach math in schools, but, like, my kids are not capable of just, like, memorizing math, because I don't think that's how they teach in schools anymore.
Yeah, they changed math.
Right, like when you were in school, they just gave you worksheets of multiplication problems, and you just had to, you know, it's like 60 seconds, you have to fill out this whole sheet.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just rote memorization. They don't do, I don't think your kids might not be doing multiplication yet, but they don't do it that way anymore.
That's terrifying.
It's some crazy system that me with my advanced computer science degree can't figure out. Anyways, back to the email. He also recommends Euphoria, which he played on the virtual console because he learned it was by Sunsoft. He thought it would be similar to Gimmick. He said maybe it wasn't quite as good because the controls are a little bit unintuitive, like having to press down an A to stop an enemy, but that the music is very good and that, you know, overall seems to be a decent game. And then just talk about the Wii U Virtual Console, which I assume will be shut down at some point. So he has bought a ton of stuff on there, and he said it's a really good system for Metroid games. The Wii U has every game except for Metroid Prime 3, Metroid 2 Samus Returns, and something called Metroid Prime Federation Force. I don't know that game.
I don't know that game either.
And of course, Metroid Prime Pinball is missing.
I heard that's a good game.
It probably is, yeah. But you see, there's 9 Metroid games on the Wii U Virtual Console. And that they're incredible bargains compared to buying them on eBay.
Oh, yeah. I believe it. Yeah. Thank you for that email. I'll take the next one.
Okay.
From Kevin. He's a longtime listener, first-time caller. And he wants to know if we heard of the Mr. Multi system that's coming out from RMC. And I have. I recently discovered this thing, and this thing looks fantastic. So it, I'll probably dive into this deeper in the Mr. episode, but in short, it kind of looks like a flattened down, I guess, Nintendo 64. Like it actually has an actual case.
Yeah.
And so it uses the Mr., you know, FPGA setup, but it has its own IO board built on. So, you could plug in real, controllers and stuff like that and have low latency. And this thing just looks awesome, and I will definitely be buying one. So it comes out in October, so I'm sure we'll report on it.
Yeah, I mean, that case looks very, like, work in progress-y.
Yeah, yeah. So they worked with... I definitely recommend everyone going to RMC's channel on YouTube. His name is Neil Thomas. They dive into this, and again, this thing is called the Mister, M-I-S-T-E-R, multi-system. And it... he hired a great company that he's worked with a lot before, who has also done FPGAs since FPGAs were a thing. So this thing is totally legit. It really seems like they're making some good choices, and doesn't seem like a Atari VCS scam or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, the first one was the thing in the Jaguar case.
What's that?
The Coleco Chameleon, if you remember that.
It was the
FPGA system.
Yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that totally did not exist.
Yeah.
That's what I worry about with these things, that we're getting another one.
Yeah.
And then last email. Yeah, Stanley. Wanted to give us an update about the Analog Pocket. I don't know if we talked about the Analog Pocket delays, but he suspects that there will be yet another delay, on top of the other delay they announced, just because chip shortages seem to be worse, and you hear about them on news all the time. And he thinks it's also why they have not, you know, taken pre-orders for their Turbo Duo FPGA yet. But at least it means he will spend less money.
Yeah, I mean, COVID's going through like Vietnam and Singapore and stuff now. So everything, yeah, all chip manufacturing now that wasn't screwed up in the beginning of the pandemic is really screwed up now.
Yeah, I don't, I have so much junk already that I don't really think about it a lot, but I think it's a bottleneck we could have seen coming prior to COVID even, but.
Oh, totally, yeah. But you're interested in the Analog Pocket, right?
Well, I didn't successfully pre-order one. I think I like had a work meeting when they went on sale, and by then the what do they call the first one, the Scalper's Edition, I think it's called.
Yeah,
like I think that was totally sold out by the time I even went to their site.
Yeah, I think that was minutes. Yeah,
and I may attempt to buy the Turbo Duo FPGA, but I suspect again that there is someone that has already written a bot that will buy them much faster than me.
Yeah, that does look great.
And again, I think my new policy for systems might be that I'm not going to buy them until I just walk into Target and see them on the shelf.
Mm, yeah.
Because that's been like, oh, hey, Skyward Sword controllers or Skyward Sword amiibos or virtually anything else. Like, all right, I can wait like a couple weeks and it'll just be on the shelf one day.
Yeah. And then scalpers don't get your money. And you don't have to set an alarm for midnight or whatever to buy it. Legit.
Right. Same thing. Like, I don't need a PlayStation 5 because, like, there's nothing on it I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
But when I want a PlayStation 5, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not doing anything crazy to buy one. I'm just going to walk into Target, and if it's there, I'll buy it. And if it's not there, then, oh, well.
Yeah.
I have to play one of the hundreds of other systems I have.
Yeah. And Stanley also, received successfully his PlayStation Classic he won in the last episode from Zach. So he, appreciates it very much. So yeah, thank you very much, Stanley.
That is like the only system that I hacked because it's so, so super easy to hack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just loaded up a ton of, of PlayStation 1 games, but I have to mess around with it more because, like, some of them the audio doesn't work. They're games I ripped myself, so I probably did not rip them in the correct, like, there's different formats. Like, at this point, I think it's probably easier just to get them from archive.org and not try and do it myself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I still know how archive.org doesn't get shut down, but whatever. All right. So we asked on social media, at least Zach did, and I appreciate him doing that because I don't want to do it myself. He asked on social media, what is the best way to play NES games? And I was kind of lightning round these here. Dr. Gaming Power, which I don't know if he's a real doctor. he's a big fan of using original hardware connected to a retro tink. But doesn't think there's anything wrong with emulation either. John says retro USB with the EverDrive.
Retro USB, the AVS. Okay, yes.
Yeah, the old tech guy uses retro USB AVS. Absolutely loves it. We got another vote for EverDrive on an AVS or Mister. No Swear Gamer takes that in a different direction and suggests using the NES Max controller. Which is, have you ever used one of those?
I am incapable of using those. I had tried when they were new. I had tried later in life, and my brain cannot use those.
Let's see, a couple more here. French Pet likes the NES to RF to CRT. And Raftronaut, I know it was pronounced it, I'm sorry, still uses a top loader with AV out into a CRT screen.
Nice.
And sometimes connected to a projector. And then someone, one more, Ross says, original hardware with EverDrive connected to a CRT because he likes Zapper games.
Huh. Yeah.
And someone asks us a quick question that I think you'll answer pretty quickly here. This is from social media. Do you have any recommendations for retro handhelds? He doesn't want to spend $200 for like a refurbished GBA and would like something that can play, more or less every system.
Yeah, so my buddy let me try out his Odroid Go Super. And so Odroid is just like a different version of a Raspberry or Raspberry Pi type system on a chip. Mm-hmm. This comes packaged in a Switch type case, you know, with the D-pad and two analog sticks and four buttons and the shoulder buttons. Very nice screen. So you could just play all your retro games from an SD card you plug in. I mean, this thing can play at least up to PlayStation 1 games. So, handheld, I mean, everything from, you know, 2600 to PlayStation 1, you're playing at full 60 frames a second, on a 854 by 480 screen. So again, it's called the Odroid Go Super. And what's the price on this? $90.
Yeah. And you can buy this on Amazon if you don't want to buy it from some site you've never heard of.
Yeah, yeah. So I highly recommend it. And if you want to go a shadier route, you can buy it from eBay and people upcharge a little bit, but you get an SD card that has all the games plus their box art and stuff like that already installed. Mm-hmm.
So, now, you have to do some. How much of this do you have to install yourself? Because it looks like it's running emulation station. Is that built in, or do you have to like configure that yourself?
It comes. It's pretty much DIY. It's hardware and the software is DIY. So, okay. You go to their site and they kind of walk you through what to do. But you can, from this site, which is Ameridroid.com, you could buy a starter bundle that comes with your SD card pre-imaged with the operating system. So you just drag and drop the games into it.
Okay. Yeah, that would be the thing that would prevent me from buying something like this. I just don't want to configure stuff anymore.
That's how I am, too.
It's, now, first of all, I thought you were really going to say, like, find a used Vita and mod it, but...
Which I would say is probably the second best, but Vitas are getting expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are not easy to mod. Modding a Vita was probably one of the most annoying things I've ever done.
Yeah, I wonder if like PSP Go is a good option, because those are basically useless now. The PSP Go, you know, you could only download games, and the PSP, I don't know if the PSP Go fixes this problem or not, but the PSP wireless only worked with like an older wireless spec. Like you literally, I cannot connect my PlayStation Portable. It's sad because I want to read my RSS feeds. I can't connect it to my Wi-Fi.
It's like wireless my Wi-Fi G literally or
does
something.
Not have a mode. It's like an old obsolete Wi-Fi spec. And your modern Wi-Fi router doesn't even support it.
Yeah, I think I have an old router around here just in case I'd ever need that. But yeah.
Yeah, so your PSP Go, if it has the same problem, because like they still have the PSP store up. Like Sony was going to pull it, but people complained and they left it up. Mm-hmm. But if you just literally can't connect to a Wi-Fi network anywhere, that thing is completely useless.
Yeah.
And that would be a good one to mod.
Yeah.
But this Odroid looks pretty interesting.
Cool. I played it. It worked great.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of systems like it that you can get on Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. But Odroid is a brand name, and they have been for like, you know, at least 8 years now, whenever systems on a chip became popular for consumers. So they were one of the first. And I think that pretty much wraps it up.
Yeah.
So I know we're...
At a quick glance, it looks like the PSP Go has the same problems as the original PSP with Wi-Fi.
Oh, great. Yeah. But we... I know we're busy over the next week, so, you know, it might be another 2 weeks before the next episode comes out. So sorry in advance about that, but I think we'll be getting back to a regular schedule in early to mid-October.
Yeah, yeah, and I know I'm picking Road Rash, but I want to do at least two or three Halloween-themed games in October, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of my favorite times of year for games, because nothing better than firing up a good horror-based game.
Yeah, yeah, especially an 8 or 16-bit one.
Yeah.
Hard.
No, I'm
scary.
Thinking like FMV.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right, so thanks for listening.
All right, thank you.